Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A dream is made real. Ricky Hatt rocks the world.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
Wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
It's over. Mamma mia, he's done it. Anthony Joshua defeats Vladimir Klitschko.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Welcome back, fight fans, to the Big Fight Reaction. I'm your host, John, joined by Chris Wardrope. Again, Chris, you're back on the show. You're a great substitute. You're like the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer of substitutes for Munich 99. You are like that guy who we go to when Johnston is unavailable. And what a great substitute we've got on the show today. Very knowledgeable, I must say. And I'm really excited to talk about the weekend's action and some of the news that have been published on social media this past 24 hours. There's some great talking points for us in this episode. But Chris, how are you doing? Thank you for coming on.
No, thank you for inviting me. And I know that Johnson's busy. And as you say, I'm happy to be your Ole, as long as you don't sack me after a bad season. I'm happy to come on any time. But as you say, you know, it's been a really, really interesting week in boxing. We've got lots to talk about. A good card to review as well, first of all. And, you know, again, we get Teofimo Lopez back this week as well. So, yeah, we've got quite a few bits and bobs to cover this week. So looking forward to the show, Sean.
So I wanted to start with what we covered as the big fight, which was Virgil Ortiz Jr. and Michael McKinson. We considered that to be the biggest fight of the weekend because of the fact that Jake Paul, Hasim Rahman and that sort of circus parade of a show ended up being cancelled, as we was talking about last week. But this Virgil Ortiz McKinson fight was really intrigued to see how it went down, and me and Johnston both gave our predictions. Johnston said later on stoppage for Virgil Ortiz. I actually said that McKinson will probably be the first man to take him the distance. Well, I didn't get that right, but he was the first man to take him 9 rounds, that's for sure. I don't think it counts, but it was still an interesting fight because, you know, we didn't really know what McKinson was going to be able to bring to a guy that's steamrolling his way through his opponents. And, you know, taking from that fight, I think the difficulty McKinson had was keeping Ortiz off him, and straight away from the first round, I felt like he struggled with that massively. He was quite aggressive. He was trying to rough Virgil Ortiz Jr. up, but it was like the punches that he was throwing that were landing on Ortiz weren't having any effect. So Ortiz was happy to just walk through them and systematically break down McKinson over the course of those 9 rounds. Looking back on the fight now, how do you rate Virgil Ortiz's performance? And do you consider him now to be the best of the bunch in the welterweight division, barring Errol Spence and Terence Crawford?
I don't think he's there for me yet, because I think it was, as you say, it was a really intriguing fight. And listening to yourself and Johnson talk about it, you know, you made so many valid points. And I think the big question really for us all was, what would actually Ortiz's strategy be? You know, because he'd had his health scare, obviously, and what he had wrong with him, you know, really affected his kidneys. The issue that he had, seen the fibres in his muscle go into his bloodstream and cause him fatigue. So we weren't really sure whether he was going to be fully recovered from that. But I think straight from the off, he went on the front foot. And as you say, McKinson didn't really have enough firepower to keep him off. And, you know, he really just walked him down. And it, by the end of it, it became a bit of a beatdown. But I think for me, Ortiz, he came in straight lines too much. And I think that McKinson at times was able to move out the way and was able to, you know, it took a while, as I suppose, for Ortiz to catch up with him because of the way that McKinson was moving. He actually moved quite well for the first few rounds, Michael McKinson, but then he just started to get slowed down by the body shots. And, you know, whenever he was on the ropes in the later rounds, it was almost like Ortiz couldn't miss with the body shots. And when they finally landed there in the 8th and the 9th round, you know, you knew the fight was over. He done well. He was stopped on his feet, you know, so he can be proud of his performance. I think the fight went pretty much like everybody thought we would be. But what did we learn about Ortiz? I think we learned he's not really at the top level of the welterweights yet. He can get there. I'd like to see him in with someone like Keith Thurman next, you know, someone who, you know, has a little bit of firepower to hit him back, you know, because that was his 19th win, 19th knockout. You know, let's actually put him in with someone with some power and see if he could stand up to a Bud Crawford, you know, an Errol Spence. I think it was a decent performance, but I don't think he blew the socks off me on Saturday night.
I can understand why you do think that. I think looking back on the fight, yes, he did go forward in straight lines quite a bit. There were things that he did where you look at other fighters and you think, well, a fighter with that sort of footwork and lateral movement that McKinson had, and you could see he was able to evade some of the shots that were being thrown. You could imagine another fighter of a higher caliber, no disrespect to Michael, being able to avoid them and let Virgil Ortiz punch himself out throughout the course of a fight. You know, you look at that and you think the strategy is let him punch himself out, let him come forward, let him exhaust that energy out of him, and then pick him off as the rounds go on. I think a more well-established fighter, say like a Spence or a Crawford, would probably be able to do that to him at this stage. So when you say Keith Thurman, it's a great shout, a really, really great shout. And obviously with them putting Keith quite high in one of the rankings quite recently, which was quite a surprise, you know, it could be a really good way for them handling Ortiz Jr. to put him in that position if he's been given a high ranking.
Yeah, absolutely, because you've got there a name, a guy who's held a title in the past, and, you know, he himself's looking to come back after his Manny Pacquiao defeat, which, you know, he's still never really recovered from. So I think it's a fight which, you know, potentially could be made. Obviously, Thurman fights usually with PBC, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I thought Ortiz did what he needed to do. And I think for him and his camp must be, you know, just happy that they got through an 8-week camp and his body didn't break down and he managed to beat a fighter, you know, who was slick and tricky. You know, and I think when you look at McKinson, you know, really most people know him from his win over Chris Congo. You know, he didn't do too much differently against Congo as he tried to do against Ortiz. It was just a difference in the class of the opponent which he was fighting. And obviously, you know, he was meant to fight this fight back in March. That fell through because of Ortiz's health scare. So it was nice to see him actually get his reward for hanging around and actually fighting there. The thing for McKinson now, where does he go now? You know, he drops back in and he's learned a lot. He's got a little bit of exposure there. So, you know, it was probably a win-win situation for McKinson as well as for Ortiz.
I think when you look at McKinson now, I think next fight would... A good fight for him now would be Blair Cobbs, who has just beaten Maurice Hooker on the undercard of that show. And I thought Blair Cobbs, for me, caused a bit of an upset against Maurice Hooker. And with that in mind, I kind of felt like, straight away, McKinson loses, Blair Cobbs wins. McKinson's at that level where I think he's shown he can hang it with higher level opponents than just the sort of the domestic opponents in the welterweight division. And I think a Blair Cobbs or somebody of that nature could be a really, really good shout for him in the future. But it really depends on how he gets manoeuvred from this point forward. I think he's got a lot of experience from this fight. I think he will take a lot of experience from it. It's just the problem I think he's got is obviously the biggest problem, the lack of punching power to be able to keep some of these bigger opponents, these trickier opponents, off him. And I think he's always going to have that problem. And when he comes up against fighters again, if he gets another shot, say at a world title in the future, and he gets the opportunity to fight another fighter on that sort of similar level as Ortiz, then I think he's possibly going to come up short again. I think it's likely that you'll see him come up short again, because I just don't think he's going to be able to keep these fighters off him, especially fighters like Ortiz, who have that style, you know, that educated pressure style, where they're going to come in and use it throughout the course of the fight. I want to see him do well, but I struggle to see him sort of getting past European level. I think maybe European level could just be where he's at. Maybe fringe world level, maybe. I don't know if you agree or you don't, but that's kind of where I see him now after seeing this fight and seeing how he was broken down systematically, and also then looking at who else is around in the division. I'd struggle to see how he'd get past any of the other bigger names in the division.
Yeah, I just hope that they actually give him a fight where he can actually come back and try and regain some of his confidence, because he's now going to be thinking, can my body withstand body shots? You know, because body shots are one thing which really affect a fighter when they take them. And here's a guy there that stopped with two fantastic lefts to the body, put him down, obviously, in the eighth and then the ninth round. So I hope that they actually build him up, Sean, and give him the opportunity to come back, rather than maybe throwing him in against, say, like a Conor Benn, who I think would be too powerful for McKinson and could walk through him. They're both on DAZN, so you could probably see at the end of the year, December, say, if Conor Benn didn't get the Eubank fight, maybe him versus McKinson, you know, if that happened, you know, it could really derail McKinson's career. So let's see what, you know, happens with him. But as I say, I think he got great exposure. Hopefully he got a great payday and he can move on and rebuild back in the UK. Then we look at, I suppose, Ortiz and say, well, where does he go next? You know, as I say, Thurman, Igias maybe would be a decent shout for him as well. So he's certainly in the top 5-6 in the world now for me. But, you know, there's certainly work to be done there. But again, he's only a young guy, isn't he? So, you know, he's got time on his hands. And that's one thing which, you know, a lot of fighters in the welterweight division don't have. You know, so, age 24, I can see him becoming a world champion. We've just got to keep the timing right for him, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. And obviously, all the talk at the moment is that there is a deal near completion for Errol Spence and Terence Crawford to fight in November of this year, which, for us as fight fans, it's amazing news if it really does come off, because this is the fight we've all been calling for. So at the moment, the likes of Ortiz, the Furmans, the Ugases of the world, even the Stanionises of the world, who holds the current WBA regular title, you know, these are the types of guys that are going to have to get in line. But we all want to see this fight to see who is the best welterweight in the world and one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. Arguably, the winner of that fight shoots himself right up to the top end of the pound-for-pound rankings. But will it get signed, sealed, and will it get delivered? That's the big question.
Yeah, I think, you know, when Bud left Top Rank and he started to make all the noises about Bob Arum, he only left Top Rank, in my opinion, to make sure this fight happened. And, you know, we've not seen or heard a great deal from him. So, you know, for me, this is his focus, you know, and you can see that fight selling out in America and, you know, probably being a pay-per-view event. You know, I just think it's a great fight, and, you know, it's going to be one which is going to be really exciting. And I think it'll be a fight where I probably chop and change my opinion two or three times before the fight actually happens. And that's the type of fights we want to see.
Yeah, I agree. I think it feels like, I'm not making a massive comparison to sort of skill sets or levels or such here when I say this, but it gets me excited. It reminds me of, like, you know, Leonard versus Hearn, something so exciting in that division, you know, something that we've been waiting for a long time. Like, people in the 80s were waiting for Leonard versus Hearns, and when it finally happens, you know, it created a fantastic fight and an amazing ending and history. And this is the type of fight that Crawford and Spence can potentially create if it goes down. I just really hope that all the rumours, all the news reports, all the outlets that are putting it out there saying it's close to completion, I really hope, you know, it is really good sources that they're getting it from, because I'll be really disappointed if it doesn't come off, because that is the one fight that I think...
Now, I think we've seen Terence Crawford at ringside, didn't we? We sat with Mike Tyson. So, you know, I really do think that the fight is just about signed. You know, I have heard that the fight is as good as done and, you know, money's getting there. So, you know, I really think that the fight will happen. And I think it will happen this year, 2022. And, you know, when it does, you know, as I say, it'll be one where we'll talk about. We'll probably have many specials over all the different podcasts which you're all involved in and, you know, TV shows and things. It's just going to be fantastic when it does finally get announced. It's the shot in the arm which non-heavyweight boxing needs, and it's a fight which must be signed.
Yeah, no, I think we all wholeheartedly agree on that. Everybody that listens, Johnston, yourself, Lukey, anybody that comes on the show, I think everybody wants this fight. It's just a case of we don't really believe it until we see it actually happen, and I think that's kind of where everyone's head is at the moment with it. And we'll get to see it. I'm sure we will. It's just a case of whether it will be this year or whether it be early next year. I really hope it is. Yeah. Really hope it is this year. So, do you want to move on and talk about the card in Sheffield then? The card in Sheffield this past weekend, Dalton Smith headlining, beating Sam O'Mason, TKO in the sixth round, to win the vacant British Super Lightweight title. And how good does Dalton Smith look at the moment?
He looks fantastic, you know, absolutely fantastic. I remember a few months back, you know, having a discussion with Andy Scott, who is on Sky, and he basically said, look, this guy is a guy that we've all got to watch out for. He's going to be, you know, the second coming, the next generation. He just looked fantastic. I thought when I seen him on the Josh Warrington versus Kiko Martinez undercard against Ray Moylett, that was the first time I'd seen him in person. And he just really impressed me with his maturity, his footwork, his timing of the shots. And again, on Saturday, you know, I posted on Twitter immediately after the fight to a few guys I know, what a mature performance. You know, after he knocked him down in the third round, he didn't rush his work, Dalton Smith. He looked for his openings. His footwork was really, really pretty. You know, he just took little steps in and closed the distance down on Sam O'Mason all the time, putting him under continued pressure.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And his hand speed was so fast. I don't know about you, Sean, but I thought he was one of the fastest guys I've seen in a long time. The first knockdown in the third round, he landed a right, then a left, then another right before the guy even went down. So, you know, for me, this hand speed and the variety of punches was just phenomenal. And I was so impressed with him. And, you know, he really just systematically broke O'Mason down. And for me, even though it was a six-round stoppage, the corner Ryan Rhodes could have stopped it at the end of the fifth for me. You know, and, you know, when he did actually come out and finish it, you know, it was quite a clinical finish and spiteful finish as well.
It was a very good performance. I really enjoyed it. I've been watching him probably since the start of his career. and I've been enjoying his progression, and I've liked the way he's been manoeuvred, obviously with his dad in the corner and his dad giving me the advice in the ring and outside of it. He's being moved quite well, and I think at this point of his career, getting the British title is the perfect point and the perfect moment for him to move forward now, because you look around the super lightweight division, and barring obviously the top two in Britain, which is Joth Taylor and Jack Catterall, around him you've got the older fighters now, like your O'Hara Davises, your Robbie Davis Juniors, even your Lewis Ritsons of the world that feel like they've been around forever. But these are the perfect opponents that I think Dalton Smith needs to be looking at, and he needs to get that experience against guys that have been in with much higher level opposition than himself. And I think that's where he will learn more from, fighting guys like that before they step him up further. I mean, don't get me wrong, Chris, I think he could be stepped up now. I genuinely do think he's got the skill and ability and experience to move forward now, but it is a case of where will his team take him. Will they go down the route of taking on another domestic opponent, defending that title three times and getting it outright, or will they move him on? I'd prefer to see him fight the guys that I've just listed off. I'd prefer to see him fight any of those guys, maybe even a Sam Maxwell or a Harlem Eubank, who's recently just got a great win and is undefeated as well. You know, these are great names in the division who I feel Dalton Smith should be looking at going forward, and maybe after another 2-3 fights against some of these names, and he continues to do what he's doing, and he continues to systematically break fighters down or dominate them over the course of the rounds, then you're going to know at that point that it is time to move him on. And I think that's one of the problems I remember with Lewis Ritson, is I felt like they moved him on a little bit too soon because he was blowing opponents out of the water. And when he moved up to the super lightweight division, he didn't do it. He wasn't able to do it. He found that his power wasn't as effective as what it was in the lightweight division, the weight below. And he come unstuck on a couple of occasions. Yeah. Same with Robbie Davis Jr. as well. He's come unstuck on a couple of occasions. So I think them two names, and maybe throw O'Hara Davis in the mix, them three, they'd be the three I'd be targeting.
Yeah. I think O'Hara Davis has got an interesting fight being lined up. The WBA are looking at him and Sandor Martin. So that's quite an interesting fight. And I think they've got to the 12th of August to actually agree that for a final eliminator. So we potentially could take O'Hara Davis out of it. But I think that would be a really good fight. But like yourself, you know, I quite like the Lewis Ritson fight there. And I think that it would be a great fight for them both, because Ritson's, since he signed with Probellum, even though he's actually been on television and we've seen him on Freeview, and I think, you know, he's been on British terrestrial telly, for want of a better word, he's almost went off the radar completely. You know, and he won the Lonsdale belt outright, then he wasn't able to really take his career forward. He's had that decision against Vasquez, which people really questioned, and he got a lot of throwback against that decision, which wasn't necessarily his fault. So, you know, someone like Dalton Smith would be a really high-profile fight for him. I think in the fight, though, I would really favour Dalton Smith, because I just really like the pressure which he puts on. You know, he's 25 as well, so he is quite a mature guy. And at the weigh-in, I thought to myself, he looked really, really tight at the weight, but he looked in fantastic shape, and he obviously didn't have any issues with him. But, you know, you could see him filling out and stepping up in weight and going up to welterweight. You know, I think, how long has he really got left at super lightweight? You know, I just thought it was a really, really, really fantastic performance by him. And, you know, I was very, very impressed, very impressed. And, you know, yeah, Ritson, Robbie Davis Jr., yeah, you could see those fights being made quite easily. And with Dalton Smith and Davis Jr. both being on DAZN, both being matchroom fighters, that would be an easy one to make.
So I'd like to move on to Sandy Ryan's revenge performance against Erica Annabella Farias for the vacant WBC International Lightweight title. Remember the first fight? Said she had a lot of issues going into it, wasn't fully conditioned, wasn't fully in shape for it. But this time she's locked herself away, gone through all the demons that she's gone through, come back and put on a much better performance over 10 rounds and be a very, very good top 5 opponent in the world in the super lightweight division, a former 2-weight world champion as well. When she first fought her in the last fight, you felt like, wow, this is a huge step up, and she comes unstuck. And then obviously you hear about what happened in the lead up to it, the, you know, the, I hate to say excuses, but you know, it is excuses. It's what's happened outside of the ring that's caused her to not perform the way she wanted to perform. But this time round, she looks really, really good. She looks much better, much more refined in the ring. Still a little bit too open at times for my liking, but she was able to walk through a lot of that and get through it and use a boxing ability to get that 10-round decision over her. How impressed was you with that performance, or was you not impressed, or how did you think it fared, is what I'm trying to get at?
I was ringside for the first fight, actually, because the first fight was on Leawood Conlon undercard. And it was an interesting one that night, because it kind of felt like Salito versus Loma, if you remember that fight. Yep. You know, we had a young up-and-comer and someone who'd been a world champion for a long time, and they just out-hustled their opponent. And that's what it felt like with Faraz and Ryan in the first fight. It just felt like she out-hustled Sandy Ryan. She knew a little bit too much. As you say, there was some issues there for Sandy Ryan going into the fight, but she just was unable to change the game plan. And anything Clifton Mitchell said to her in that first fight just didn't seem to register. And it was just very, very repetitive. So I think for me, one of the interesting things, and one of the things which people didn't necessarily touch upon a great deal, was the difference in physical appearance of Sandy Ryan. You know, the first fight was up at 144 pounds. Here she came in at 139.5, and, you know, made the super lightweight limit. You could just see there was a difference in her body tone. You know, those 5 pounds made a massive difference for her. Her arms were toned, her legs were toned, and she just carried herself very differently, even into the ring. So I thought she boxed really well, and I can't necessarily understand the kind of haters on social media who've been saying it was a poor performance. You know, I've read a lot of that about it, so I really don't understand what they were watching, because I thought she took someone who, as they say, out-hustled and out-muscled her, kept her at range, and really fought very, very well. She switched hitting really nice. She went from left to right, back again. She managed to keep her distance. She kept at range. Whenever she wanted to land the jab, which I thought landed perfectly all night, she stepped into range very subtly, managed to land and get back out. She controlled pretty much every round in the fight. And while the judges' scorecards made it a little bit tighter than I'm making out, I actually thought Sandy Ryan controlled the fight more than the judges' scorecards gave her. So I was actually impressed with it, because what we've got to remember, it was 2018 when she won the Commonwealth Games. This is only her fifth pro fight against someone, as you say, who's been in with, you know, Michaela Mayer, Cecilia Brackes, Jessica McCaskill. While she might have lost at the top level, she's still a world champion at 2 weights, and she defended the belt at this weight 4 times. So I was really impressed with the performance.
Yeah, very good improvement for her. And already they're looking at moving on straight away, because the depths of the division aren't so great. It leaves the opportunities more open than ever, really, for Sandy Ryan to move forward, which is really exciting, because, you know, they get thrusted into these fights so soon, and you think to yourself, God, is she really going to have the experience to do that? But knowing her pedigree, as we do know her pedigree from the amateur game, we know that she's got the skill and ability to be able to transition it over. And I think what she's shown here is she's overcome the adversity from the first fight, adjusted, got back to winning ways, and done it in a really good fashion, controlled the fight, as you rightly pointed out. So I am excited to see, like, where this takes her now, where this journey takes her. Will there be a big fight lined up for her? Well, we'll have to wait and see. But of course, it's exciting to see it all play out, and the manoeuvre of the divisions, and the way, obviously, that the boxing on that side of the sport is really sort of coming to fruition. And, you know, we'll probably mention a little bit later on about the Shields Marshall card as well. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But I just want to briefly then go through just a few of the other fights, just rounding it up, really, before we start talking about some of the real meaty talking points for this week. So Jordan Thompson is a fighter who I have been saying for quite some time is a fighter to look out for, and he overcame adversity by getting dropped late in the 10th round. And he hung on. He looked like he was out of there, but he hung on to get the UD over his opponent, Vasyl Dukar. And Johnston has talked about Jordan a lot, and I've talked about Jordan a lot, and I feel like he needs to be moved on a little bit further forward. However, after seeing that performance, I'm not so sure. I don't know what you made of it, Chris.
Yeah, I think Jordan Thompson's been someone who people have talked about a lot, you know, and I think when you actually see, you know, his age now, he's 29, only his 14th pro fight, you know, yeah, he's probably just not ready to be moved on at the moment, you know. I think a lot of people are thinking he's a banger, he's got a lot of movement, but, you know, for me, there needs to be some improvements made by him. He's very, very tall, you know, which is, for a cruiserweight, he's you know, probably overly tall. I just don't think he would be able to mix it with the cruiserweights, which we've seen a few weeks back. You know, Billum Smith, say, for example, I don't think he's ready for someone of that level. Even Isaac Chamberlain, when he comes back, I'm not sure he's ready for that level. You know, he's been matched pretty carefully and pretty slowly. You know, he got the win, and it was a decent opponent, actually, Vasco Ducart, you know, really, really decent opponent. But, you know, for me, yeah, there was just something. Anytime I've seen Jordan Thompson, there's probably been just something lacking, which I can't quite put my finger on. I'm not sure I overly find him exciting, which, you know, no disrespect to him. I just don't know what lacks from him. He just doesn't seem to engage me. So, you know, I'm not really sure what to make of him. But one thing I would say that I really liked, I seen he took his belt round to his gran. I don't know if you've seen that footage on social media, who apparently is bedbound or housebound. And, you know, it was a really touching moment when he had his IBF European belt around his waist. So, you know, that was good, because it shows you that boxing changes lives and brings happiness. But, yeah, for me, I wouldn't put him in with the elite of British cruiserweights yet. And he probably needs a few more learning fights. But at 29, how much time has he really got left?
So I'm going to move on, Chris. I want to just briefly go over some of the results, just for the benefit of everybody listening. If anybody's got any thoughts, feelings and opinions, obviously drop us a tweet at BTR Boxing Pod. So Hopi Price gets a victory on points over 8 rounds. Kieran Conway is back with a TKO in 5 rounds. Campbell Hatton gets another points victory over 6. And Johnny Fisher gets a knockout in the second round. Janaid Boston goes 2-0. TKO in the 6th and final round of the fight, and Akib Fiaz also gets a victory on points over 6 rounds. They were the main sort of talking points, main fighters that people are really interested in following at the moment. But I wanted to use the last 10-15 minutes of the show to talk to you, Chris, about the social media announcement from Tyson Fury about the fact that he is coming out of retirement, or he says retirement, it's not really retirement, but he's coming out of retirement and he wants to fight Derek Chisora for a third time. He wants another heavyweight trilogy on his resume. I don't believe that, personally, first and foremost. I believe it's a good payday for one of his friends away from the sport. That's my first interpretation of it. But my second interpretation of it is that we know he's not retired. We know he's waiting for the winner of Usyk Joshua, which is happening just next week. And this, for him, is like a tick-over fight with one of his friends in the sport. Even though they've fought twice, they have become good friends outside of the ring. And it feels like, with Chisora saying he wants to get paid before he retires, it kind of makes sense that Tyson Fury can bring the bacon home so that Chisora does get paid. So what are you making of this fight and the potential announcement of this happening? And what do you make of the fact that he's saying Isaac Lowe's going to train him for it?
Well, I think when you've seen the two of them standing on Morecambe seafront today doing the video, you know, I think you just seen how absurd it was. And I think that's exactly what Tyson Fury was going for. You know, Isaac Lowe is absolutely tiny in comparison next to Tyson Fury. You know, you've got Tyson Fury there, 6'9". You know, Isaac Lowe, you know, he's probably lucky if he's 5'4". So, you know, I think it was all tongue-in-cheek. And I think we've kind of got used to that with Fury now. He makes an announcement, we kind of all laugh at it, and we know that there's probably something else behind it. But for me, would he really go away from Sugar Hill at this point in his career? I can't see it. You know, Frank Warren was on TalkSport tonight as I was driving back to work as well, and they asked him, you know, what's this about Isaac Lowe training Tyson Fury? Frank Warren said, well, that's news to me. You know, so, you know, I think the one thing about Tyson Fury is he likes to...
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Use kidology, and he likes to try and sell things to the public. And you just hit it on the head, Sean. This is two mates who fought before, looking one for a payday and one to tick over while they make a decision on what they want to do with their career longer term. You know, and that's how it feels. For me, I thought Chisora would have hung around, and, you know, I think personally Usyk's going to beat AJ, so I thought they would maybe keep Del Boy around for bringing AJ back at the tail end of this year, because apparently Joshua has announced that he wants to fight again in December, regardless of the outcome against Usyk in Saudi. So I always thought they would keep Del Boy there, but, you know, looks like Fury will get in first. Interestingly, though, Frank Warren said he can't see a date for the fight between Chisora and Fury because of the World Cup. And the World Cup was obviously coming at the tail end of the year because of the location of it and the heat. So, you know, I'm not quite sure, one, the fight will actually happen, or two, if it does happen, where or when it will happen. You could maybe see it ending up at the Manchester Arena one night, one Saturday. I don't think we need the fight, though, but it's a tick-over fight for both guys, really. It's a payday for Chisora, as you say, and Tyson Fury just keeping active and keeping in the public glare.
It makes sense for him to have a tick-over fight, though, doesn't it? If he's waiting for the winner of AJ and Usyk 2, and he's waiting for that eventual winner, he's going to find out by the end of next weekend who he potentially would face for all the marbles, which is what we all want to see, what we've been crying out for at least 2 years now. We want to see this. We want to see Fury face AJ or Usyk. That's it. We want to see an undisputed heavyweight champion. I mean, we haven't seen one of them for many, many years, and that's what we're all holding out for as fight fans. We really want this to happen. So Tyson Fury's just, I think he's doing, like you say, a lot of kidology. He's making the announcement tongue-in-cheek. He's just trying to get interest drummed up in him. He's going to get people detracting from him. He's going to get people disliking him because of it, of course, but he's got that many people that do like him because of where he's gone to and where he's come from and the journey he's been on, that they will pay to watch him. They will go to wherever it is to watch him. They will pay on pay-per-view to watch him. So for Chisora, who wants a payday, who's coming towards the end of his career, this is going to be like, I hate to say it, but it might even feel like a bit of a glorified sparring session. However, when I think of this fight, when I think of the fight, Chris, I think of Tyson Fury and Derek Chisora actually putting on a really good fight between one another. Even though it's two mates outside of the ring that are going to help each other out in different ways, I could actually see this being a more entertaining fight than the first two fights they had.
You know, what you get here is two guys who know each other inside out. As you say, they're friends. You know, they fought twice. You know, the last time they fought, Derek Chisora was obviously stopped. So Fury probably knows, I've got enough now to stop Derek Chisora whenever I want. You know, as you say, glorified sparring session. It would be fun to watch it. I think the build-up would be fun because I think both of them would really have a laugh with the build-up. But I think they would go into the fight deadly serious, and they would actually get what they both needed from the fight. One, a payday. Derek Chisora loves walking into a restaurant and people knowing him, you know, and he loves the fame and the adulation of boxing. And I think this fight would elevate him even further into the public consciousness. So, you know, if it happens, I'd watch it. I'd probably buy into the fight. I just think, though, it doesn't feel like a world title fight. It's a mark time fight. And if it does happen, you know, let's embrace it, because the sport actually needs Tyson Fury. And I know a lot of people have got their detractions about Fury. They don't like what he said previously in his first career, if we want to call it that, maybe about women or maybe making some silly statements. But he's really atoned for that now, and he is a changed man. I like him. I've got a lot of time for him. I've got a lot of time for him as a boxer. And you know, the sport is a better place for having Tyson Fury around second time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's where people need to realistically look at it. Take yourself out of the box for just one moment and think about it from a business sense and what he's trying to achieve and what he wants to do. At the end of the day, he wants to try and become undisputed heavyweight champion of the world before he retires. Anybody in his position would want to do that, and that's what he's waiting for. For Chisora, it's a great payday. Is it a fight that I'd watch or consciously want to watch? Not necessarily, because I know probably what is going to happen. However, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it goes down. Like you say, good build up, good bit of banter between the two of them. It'll make for good entertainment value, which will put eyes on the sport in a positive way, not so much in a negative way, like we talk about YouTube boxing and some of the negativity that comes with that. This is more of a positive light. It's a world champion going in against a guy who's fought the best of his era, technically the best of his era, barring Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. They're the only two he hasn't fought, Derek Chisora. So, you know, for him, it's a tick-over fight, like you say, for potentially fighting Joshua later on down the line. I mean, we were speaking about this, me and Johnson, a few weeks ago when Chisora beat Pulev, and we said, like, you know, what could Chisora do? Who has he got to fight before, you know, he can say he's fought the best of his era? And the only two were Wilder and were Joshua. So, like you, I agree that I think Usyk's going to win the rematch. And then who is the perfect layup fight for him? Who's the perfect return for him? Derek Chisora. Perfect return for him. That could happen early next year. Maybe March, yeah. April time next year could be the perfect fight. I'm interested to see how it pans out anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting, and I think, look, we were going to this fight, and I think the difference with this fight and, say, Tyson Fury and Dillian White, there was people who actually thought Dillian White could beat Tyson Fury. I think we were going to this fight with nobody expecting Derek Chisora to win. Even though he's a big guy and he's had a fair share of knockouts, he isn't a massive concussive one-punch knockout artist either. So I don't think anybody would really expect him to win. And I think people would just enjoy the pantomime and the show of this particular fight if it does get announced. You know, again, on TalkSport tonight, Frank Warren said it would be announced within the next 4 days whether or not the fight will actually happen or not. So, you know, again, with Fury, we may just actually see him, you know, just not announce anything, because he loves to actually play with people's minds. That's what he does and enjoys. But, you know, if it happens, hey, let's embrace it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think let's embrace it is a good way to think about this fight going forward. So, Chris, one more topic of conversation before we call this an episode. Announced is the undercard to Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall's undisputed middleweight contest. And it's an all-female card, which is the first of its kind, the first in history. History is being created. We've got a really, really strong lineup of female fighters on this card. Chief support is Michaela Mayer and Alicia Baumgartner for four of the super featherweight belts, which is a great chief support fight, which I'm looking forward to as well. But then you've got the likes of Caroline Dubois, Ebony Jones, Lauren Price, Carice Artingstall, April Hunter, Shannon Ryan is on this card as well. It's actually a really, really strong card that they're looking to put on here. And to be fair, you know, you'd think if anybody was going to be the first one to put this card on, you would have thought it would have been Eddie Hearn. But the fact that it's going to be a joint promotion with Bob Arum, Demetrius Alita and Ben Shalom from Boxer, all three of them collaborating to put this card on, I think it's fantastic. It's a fantastic evolution moment for women in boxing. And the fact that we're actually going to get to see an all-female card, I think is a huge landmark moment for the sport. And whilst it will, again, have its detractors, people that can't stand female boxing or they don't like the quality or they don't think the quality is great, you need to embrace the fact that this is one of the biggest steps forward in not just sport, but in general, in terms of gender equality. This is a huge step forward. You think about all them years ago, the fights that women had to have for the right to vote, and now we've got an all-women boxing card happening in London. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know the only thing I would say about the show which disappointed me, and when I say it, you know, you'll kind of laugh, is that we didn't get Terry Harper versus Hannah Rankin on the show, because that was talked about. And I think if that had been put on the show as well, then we've got something which is pretty epic. I believe Terry Harper versus Hannah Rankin is going to go on in Nottingham on the 24th of September, and that's going to be on the same card as Maxie Hughes versus Kid Galahad, if rumours are true. But if that fight had been on this one, it would have just finished it off as being almost like a perfect all-female show. But I think the top two fights in this, you know, stand out. I just think they're absolutely fantastic fights. You know, I think Michaela Mayer, what she did against Mevia Hamadouche over in Las Vegas was just a great fight. It was an advertisement for women's boxing and just an advertisement for boxing. It was an absolute fantastic fight. And Alicia Baumgartner as well, you know, you've got someone who had over 165 amateur fights. You know, I think people who criticise female boxing do so because they think that they've came to the sport late, they don't understand the sport, their bodies aren't attuned to the sport. Someone like Alicia Baumgartner's been fighting since she was 8 years old. So, you know, she's one of the, alongside someone like Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall, she's one of these fighters. She's born and bred as a fighter, you know, and this is the first time that we're really seeing that coming through in the female game. You know, we've had Katie Taylor, we've had Amanda Serrano, very similar in nature. You know, they've got to the peak now, but now we're seeing kids who, you know, are coming through who've been boxing now for 10 years, 15 years, and they're fantastic fighters. Put out the fact they're female, they're just fantastic fighters. And the top four on this card are just fantastic fighters who I'm genuinely excited about. Put them all together on one card and we've got two fantastic, massive fights. And they're massive fights.
Yeah, they are massive fights. You know, recently, if everybody's not had a chance to hear the episode I did with Christy Martin, I did the interview with Christy Martin recently about her new book and tidbits about her career. And, you know, this was something I spoke to her about and I asked her about this evolution. And she's just, you know, she's so happy for the fact that, you know, the likes of Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano have just changed the game with their mega fight. That it's just, it's helping pave the way, much like she did all the way back in 1996. Being on the undercard of Frank Bruno and Mike Tyson, you know, these moments in the sport are paving the way for other fighters in the future to come forward. And I think this is going to be another card, another show, which will do the same. And then when you look at the undercard, yes, okay, some of them are sort of matches that are for the right matches for the fighters at their stages of the careers, but you know, you've got Caroline Dubois, Lauren Price, Carice Artinstall, all coming off the back of the Olympics in their pro career, Shannon Ryan, April Hunt, you know, all these fighters that we're looking to follow here, particularly in the UK, and they're all featuring on it, and it must be a huge honour for them to be a part of such a landmark historic card. So I'm excited for it, no matter what people think. I'm genuinely excited for it. And yes, just going back to what you said, Terry Harper, Hannah Rankin, I think that would have probably been, for us as UK fight fans, the cherry on the cake.
Yeah, it would have been a fantastic one, you know, and it would have just been a fight which I think would have been, you know, potential showstopper. And, you know, but, and saying that, let's not detract, you know, Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall, you know, they've got so much needle between them. You know, I think as fight time gets closer, you know, Ben Shalom has marketed this really well. You know, he's got them both ringside for the last fight, hasn't he? And, you know, he's got them both in, and well, it turned into a little bit of a screaming match, you know. It really sold the fight, and it's taken it from being up in, say, the Metro Arena in Newcastle, you know, where in front of about 5,000 fans, down to potentially 20,000 fans at the O2. So, you know, he's actually marketed this fight very, very well. And, you know, we get to Clarissa Shields, you know, a two-time Olympic champion, two-weight undisputed champion, you know, against Savannah Marshall, who, for me, looked a complete fighter. You know, again, forget the fact that she's actually a female, you know, she's just a fighter. And what Fury has done for Savannah Marshall, the way she holds her body, the way she fires out her jabs and her punches almost from the waist, you know, her foot movement, and she's heavy-handed, she's just genuinely exciting to watch. So, you know, for me, this card's actually got a lot of positives, and I'm genuinely excited to watch it.
Me too. Really looking forward to it. Great little announcement today. The undercard to this is going to be nice for everybody to watch. It's going to be really interesting to see the progression of some of the undercard fighters as well. It really does bring some good eyeballs on the sport, and hopefully will inspire more generations of young girls to get in the boxing gym and realise that it is okay. It doesn't matter what gender you are. You can try this sport. You can try any sport. And I think that's one of the big takeaways from me, is it will open the doors for that. It will hopefully make a load of young girls look at it and go, do you know what, I want to be this, I want to do that, and hopefully it just brings more talent and quality to the sport of boxing, and ultimately that's what we want to see. So yeah, great card, really, really excited about it. It's been great to talk about it. Chris, is there anything more you wanted to talk about on this reaction show, any news that's come out, anything that you want to address before we call this an episode?
I would say if we just went back to the all-female fight, I'd be interested to get your view on one thing, Sean. Obviously, the two big fights are over 10-2s. Do you think it's time that the women's world title fight stepped up to 12-2s?
I said yes to this. I agreed to it. The biggest thing, actually, funnily enough, this was something you actually tweeted about quite recently. I remember you tweeted to one of the female boxing outlets. I think it's Women's Fight News, I think it is. Give them a shout out because they do some great work. And they were talking about, between the two of you, from what I could gist from it, was that you were talking about the reasons why potentially it can't go the 3-minute rounds and why it should only stick to twos, but maybe make it 12-2s. And I think it was quite interesting. I'm not very sort of medically, technically minded in that regard. So the intricacies of why it can't be made 3-minute rounds it's not something I fully grasp, but I've got the sort of gist of why. It's to do with biology. It's to do with impact resistance. It's to do with many other things. And now it's been explained to me in a little bit of simpler context that I do understand why. So going to 3-minute rounds is not something now I could support, knowing what I know now, but moving it up to 12-2s, I don't see the problem with that.
I'm all for 12-2s, I think. And you know, Amanda Serrano, you know, she was quite happy to move to 3-minute rounds. I think she's advocated it. Michaela Mayer, she said, you know, let's get 12-2s in here as well. So, you know, I think it would just be something which would be, you know, a differential for them, for the title fights, you know, for the ladies. And I think it would also help in terms of equality and money, because one of the big things which the ladies have talked about is they don't feel that they're getting parity in purses as yet. So maybe something like that would actually help them achieve, you know, that kind of purse parity. But I do believe that the female fighters on this fight will actually all be getting paid very well. And, you know, that's one thing that Ben Shalom's actually making sure happens, is that fighters are getting paid well because they've got the backing of Sky. And in this fight, as you say, Top Rank and Salida from New York. So, yeah, it's an interesting discussion, that one. You know, I personally think, you know, 12-2s would be ideal. You know, we'll see how the sport progresses. You know, it's still in very much an infant stage.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, isn't it? I think because of how recently it's come to the forefront, as in the last few years, I think it might take a couple of other years before people will really accept it, and the Board of Control will accept that actually there's no medical reasons why this can't happen, but they understand why increasing the length of the rounds, because there are medical studies which support that not happening. I can kind of understand why they'd make that decision. But 12-2s, I don't see a problem in. Like you say, purse parity is a huge thing. We've just seen the England women's football team win the Euros, and you know, you look at the salaries compared to the men's, and it's pretty disgraceful, you know, in terms of what they're not getting compared to the men, and yet they go out there and show the men how it's supposed to be done, and that's the irony of it all. So I just feel like, you know, there's a lot of valid points with this, and I agree, 12-2s would be great for female fighters to be able to then step up, you know, the way they go into fights. They'll be able to step up the way they condition themselves for fights, the way they plan their attack in the fights, the way they strategize through the fight. I think that'll be something that will definitely come with time. But it's a great point. I'm glad you brought it up, and it goes in line with obviously what we've been talking about. So thank you for bringing it up, and of course thank you for coming on and being that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for BTR Boxing Podcast.
You're welcome. That wasn't bad at a few hours' notice, was it? So, always delighted to help you out, Sean.
Oh, it's a pleasure. For everybody listening, thank you, as always, for listening to the Big Fight Reaction. We're not back this week for a Big Fight preview because there isn't any major fights. Teofimo Lopez is back and he's returning at 140 this weekend, but I'm going away again and Johnson's going away. So we're both going on our annual leave, as we like to say. So there's no Big Fight preview for this weekend's coming action, but we will be back next week, of course, for the big one, Anthony Joshua, Alexander Usyk. Really excited to be talking about probably one of the biggest fights of the year. It's a genuine pleasure, as always, for you guys listening to us. Make sure you follow us on social at BTR Boxing Pod, on Facebook, Instagram. Follow us on YouTube as well. Make sure you leave a comment, any thoughts, feelings and opinions. As always, you know where to go, you know what to do. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time.
A dream is made real. Ricky Hatton rocks the world.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
Wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
It's over. Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.